This is Health Yeah, your weekly update on what's going on in the health, wellness, and medical world with Monica Robbins.
Vaccine. Some call them the greatest medical advance in the last century. Others question whether or not we really need them or if we need so many. It's a touchy subject made more complicated with a lot of misinformation. In this episode, we go straight to an expert for straight talk on what we need to know.
And so when they push this notion that the vaccines could overwhelm the immune system, they are saying, I don't know anything about immunology.
This and much more straight ahead on Prescription for Life. Hello and welcome to Prescription for Life. I'm Monica Robbins. Your body's immune system, it's your armor. It protects you against germs, including bacteria, viruses, fungi, and toxins. But some of us may have a chronic illness, such as diabetes or heart disease or cancer, that can put us at higher risk for infection, making us what's known as being immunocompromised. That's why boosting your immune system is essential for defending the body against diseases and viruses. And one way to do that is by becoming vaccinated. A little later, we'll hear from an infectious disease specialist who will explain how vaccines work. But first, there are other ways to protect yourself, from the foods you eat to your personal hygiene. Safe practices at home and on the go to keep everyone in your family safe, especially the little ones.
Is your family battling the virus triple threat?
Healthcare facilities are already being overwhelmed with sick kids, especially with RSV, which can cause cold-like symptoms, but also serious respiratory problems, particularly in babies.
Remember the basics. Show your kids how to properly wash their hands, scrubbing for 20 seconds when they get home, after using the bathroom, and before eating.
While there's no magic way to keep your kids from ever getting sick, there are some things you can do to better your odds, like keeping your kids' vaccinations up to date.
That includes the flu and COVID vaccines. And for infants, talk to your pediatrician about the new shot that may lessen the severity of an RSV infection. And Grandma was right. Research suggests chicken soup may give you relief from the common cold symptoms, easing throat soreness and preventing dehydration.
Kids generally just need time to get better. So let your child rest, watch some movies, and very importantly, keep them hydrated.
Check with your pediatrician about medications, but steer clear of cough medicine for kids. It really doesn't work well and can even be dangerous. Last fall, CVS pulled some cold medicines after the FDA said the active ingredient doesn't work. And remember, never ignore the signs of an emergency. If your child has a fever of 105 degrees, is showing signs of dehydration, or is having trouble breathing, get them to the ER. Any fever in newborns under 2 months is also an emergency.
Dr. Amy Edwards is board certified in pediatrics and pediatric infectious diseases. She's on the front lines and sees the devastation that vaccine preventable diseases can cause, which is why she's pro-vaccine. And she explains what years in the industry has taught her about the impact vaccinations leave on those who decide to get them and those who don't. Joining me now is Dr. Amy Edwards, a pediatric infectious disease specialist with Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, a lot to unpack. Cold and flu season. What is the most common question you get this time of year?
This time of year, I have a lot of people asking me, how do I boost my immune system? How do I not get sick? How do I avoid the cold and flu? I get that all the time.
We have seen a huge rise since COVID of people who are choosing not to vaccinate at all. Your thoughts on that as an infectious disease specialist?
I mean, it's making me busier, right? Because kids who aren't vaccinated tend to have more infections. There's basic data on that. You can look at the epidemiology and the science. It's really frustrating, actually, is kind of where I come back to time and time again. We have these amazing tools that our ancestors would have crawled over burning coals to get their hands on. And we're like, no, I'm good. You know, I watched some YouTube video and they said I didn't need it, so I probably don't need it and I'm just not gonna get it. And I'm like, you're leaving your child at risk for some just really serious diseases, and it just doesn't need to happen.
What's your biggest concern right now?
Measles. right now. Of all of the vaccine preventable illnesses, it's the most contagious. And so it's the one that is, we call it the canary in the coal mine, because once you start losing herd immunity, once you start getting a certain unvaccinated, a certain size of unvaccinated population, measles is always going to be the first thing that rips through. We're already seeing that in places around the United States. We had our own measles outbreak here in Ohio, situated a little bit further south. It's always that first indicator that our vaccination rates are dropping. Measles is always comes first.
Well, and also, doesn't the measles vaccine eventually wear off in some cases?
Not really. Not, that's actually why we boost now. So once upon a time, we only gave one MMR shot. But then we discovered actually that that wasn't enough. Now that we boost, actually most people retain immunity from measles for life. I will say that it's only about 97 to 98% effective. So there are about 2 to 3% of people who are walking around fully vaccinated, but aren't actually fully protected. And so they will get measles, but they will get a very mild form of measles, and they don't appear to be at risk for any of the complications from measles. So they're not going to end up hospitalized. They're not going to get the encephalitis, the brain inflammation. They're not going to get the pneumonia, that sort of stuff. And so they will get measles, but it'll be pretty mild.
Can people die from measles?
Absolutely. About one out of every 1,000 children who get measles will die. That's only kind of the tip of the iceberg of what measles can do to us. It can destroy our immune system. It can destroy our brain. It can cause permanent disability. So even if you, some people say, oh, one in every 1,000 kids, that's not a lot of kids. I mean, for me, it should be zero, right? Like no kid should die. We should go from birth to 18, no deaths, right? Push that off to the adult doctors to deal with when we're 90 years old and, you know, ready to go. But so any kid dying is a kid too many. But some people, one in 1,000, that doesn't sound so bad. Of the kids who get measles encephalitis, for instance, about 20, somewhere between 20 and 50% of them will be left with neurologic, like lifelong neurologic problems, whether it be learning disabilities, you know, some sort of problems with hearing or sight. And then the other thing that it does to us is it causes what we call immunologic amnesia. So infections and vaccines, all these things train memory B cells and memory T cells. And we build this library over our life full of all these things that we've fought in the past. And that's why us young adults, you know, I'm 40, I think 45 now, are generally healthy because I have this huge library built up over 45 years of experience and vaccines that my immune system has. And so when somebody coughs on me, I'm my body can pull that out of my library and fight that infection off. Measles burns that library to the ground. And so you start with a blank slate. All your memory B cells and T cells are gone. And so now you have to go through all those infections again that you already dealt with. Why? Like, why do you even want to go there? You know, like.
So there's a reason there's a vaccine for
it. There's a reason there's a vaccine for it. Absolutely. It's just not necessary. Why torture your child?
So what's the biggest reason why people aren't getting that vaccine?
Whew, that's a story. So the measles vaccine, it's had a long history of anti-vaccine arguments against it, which I've never really understood. Like, why that one? You know, why not polio? I don't know. I think partly because as healthcare has gotten better, as overall nutrition has gotten better. So back in the day, you know, if you go back 200 years, it was mostly the wealthy that had access to good nutrition. But now it's more ubiquitous. Most people have access to good nutrition. Obviously, that's not universally true, I realize. But it is true to say that the better your nutrition, the higher your socioeconomic status, the better access you have to high quality medical care, there is a lot we can do to improve outcomes from measles. So back in the day, it used to be about one out of every 100 kids that got measles died. Now it's about one in every 1,000. So I think because we were already seeing improvement in measles, there was some idea that like maybe we didn't need this vaccine. And so people hated it more. Like, I don't know. I don't know why it happened. But, and of course, there was the, you know, the MMR vaccine causes autism, which is obviously not true. And it's just gone from there. I think the most common that I hear now is that kids are just getting too many shots. It's too many. It overwhelms their immune system. That's a really common one. And then these diseases aren't in circulation anyway, so why should I bother? Like, my kid's not going to catch it. So if they're not going to catch it, why should I expose them to the vaccine? So I think those are kind of some of the most common arguments against vaccination that I hear.
Is that true?
No. No. The vaccine's overwhelming the immune system. I hear that one a lot. And if you go on anti-vaccine websites, which I do, it's part of my job, it's the one that's pushed the most by the anti-vaxxers. And it's really interesting because basically by saying that, they prove that they know nothing about the immune system and they know nothing about microbiology and the human body. Because anybody that is trained in immunology or infectious disease, anybody that knows anything about basic microbiology knows that our immune system has to face off against hundreds of thousands or millions of bacteria, viruses, proteins every day. So this idea that like 6 or 7 or 8 shots could overwhelm the immune system, it's nonsense. I'll give you an example. Every time you brush your teeth, bacteria from your mouth get into your bloodstream. Every time you poop, bacteria from your gut get into your bloodstream. Every day, every time, always. But you don't get sick because you have this wonderful thing called an immune system. Every time you cut your skin, bacteria go flooding into your body. And yeah, sometimes it does get a little infected, right? Sometimes your immune system doesn't fully win, and the glory of antibiotics, right, to be there to help. But most of the time, our cuts heal, right? Because of our immune system. Again, it just, every time you eat, the food that you eat, even if it's very well cooked, it's full of proteins. These are, we call them antigens, once they're broken down inside the body. The immune system scans everything that we eat looking for potential pathogens, just in case. It's actually where food allergies come, because if it overreacts to a food antigen, then you get food allergies. And so your immune system is doing all this work all the time, every day. And so I almost picture the immune system like, you know, this guy's hard at work doing all this work, and then you come up and say, here's like one more second of work, is that going to bother you? And he's like, no. Like, you know, but we're like, oh, these vaccines, it's too much work for the immune system. Like, do you have any idea how much work the immune system is already doing? This is, the immune system barely notices the difference. You know, it's ridiculous to think that the immune system can be overwhelmed by something as tiny as a vaccine when you think about all the work that it's doing every day. And so when they push this notion that the vaccines could overwhelm the immune system, they are saying, I don't know anything about immunology. Like, that's the translation there. So yeah, no, vaccines don't overwhelm the
immune system. But don't vaccines have chemicals in them?
They do. So does, I mean, water is a chemical, H2O. Here's a fun, let me go there then. Formaldehyde, have you heard that one? Right, vaccines have formaldehyde in them. And of course, formaldehyde causes cancer, right? Those statements are both true, believe it or not. Vaccines absolutely do sometimes have trace amounts of formaldehyde in it. It is also true to say that formaldehyde can cause cancer. But why am I up here being like, dude, that's totally no big deal? Because guess what else has formaldehyde in it? You do. I do. We would die if we didn't have formaldehyde in us. Because our DNA and RNA inside our bodies absolutely require formaldehyde to produce themselves. So when we break down an old dead cell that needs to, you know, it's done its work, it needs to go into the recycle bin and have all its pieces, parts reused. When we break down nucleic acid, so that's your ribonucleic acid and your deoxyribonucleic acid, one of the chemicals that's a byproduct of that breakdown process is formaldehyde. We store that formaldehyde in our bodies, and then when we're rebuilding new cells and we're making RNA or DNA, we actually need that formaldehyde in that enzymatic process to build RNA and DNA. So your body is full of formaldehyde. And the amount of formaldehyde that your body has generated right now in our discussion is like 1,000 times higher than the trace amounts that you would find in vaccines. Now here's the follow-up question. Why is there formaldehyde in our vaccines? because our vaccines are derived from living organisms. It isn't only humans that rely on RNA and DNA. Viruses, bacteria, mold, fungus, everything that is alive in this world, I don't know about other planets, everything on this planet that's alive has RNA and DNA, which means everything that is alive on this planet has formaldehyde. Everything. So when you eat broccoli, there's formaldehyde inside the cells. When you grow the measles virus in a lab to make the measles vaccine, there's formaldehyde, right? Because it's in everything. And so it's really fascinating because you can say two true statements. Formaldehyde can be found in trace amounts in vaccines. Formaldehyde can cause cancer. Those are both true, but it's completely irrelevant because it's all about dose. In natural biological amounts, like what's in your body, what's in vaccines, what's in food, formaldehyde is necessary. Not only is it safe, it's necessary. But sure, if I go out and buy a gallon of formaldehyde and drink it, probably not the best idea I've ever had in my life. So that would be a problem. Chemicals are a complicated topic because, I mean, one, everything is a chemical. Water's a chemical, right? H2O. I think most of us, when we say the word chemical, we're generally talking about like the scary chemicals, right? And most people have never taken biochemistry. So most people don't know that formaldehyde is natural. They think of it as man-made, or they think of it, you know, in that chemical sense. And yes, there are bad chemicals out there, but formaldehyde's not one of them when it's at biologic doses. Formaldehyde is actually necessary for life, at least the way our life has decided to be with RNA and DNA. Maybe there's other life that doesn't, we haven't found it yet, but so that's, you know, and that is what the anti-vaccine lobby, I don't know, the anti-vaxxers, I don't know what to call them, the morons, whatever, they'll take these little truths and they'll rely on you not knowing basic biology, basic biochemistry, basic immunology, and they sound so plausible. Right? I mean, because formaldehyde, that's a scary sounding word, right? But if you know anything about biochemistry, you know formaldehyde's not scary at all in the right dose.
Bottom line, do your homework.
Bottom line, talk to an expert. That's what your doctor is for, right? And to me, it comes down to trust. If you think that the rando that you listen to on YouTube is more trustworthy than the physician that you take your children to for their checkups, you might want to find a different pediatrician, right? Because the pediatricians will say the same things I'm saying, and that is that, I mean, the studies that have been done on vaccine safety, I mean, they're there, they've been done. There's massive amounts of data that show how safe vaccines are for the vast majority of people. There's massive amounts of data about how effective they are, the efficacy. And your pediatrician is happy to sit down and answer your questions. But if you're gonna say, well, you know, I heard on YouTube, blah, 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 that translates in my head to you don't trust your pediatrician. So then why are you taking your kid there to get their well child checks if you don't trust them? Right? So it's basic trust. Going back to this idea that experts do exist, like let's go back to the pre-COVID, pre-internet, I'm gonna believe everything I read on the internet world, to this idea that there are experts. We do exist. And we studied a really long time to become experts. And so you have to understand that you as an individual, me as an individual, I can't know everything, right? And I'll give you an example, even inside the world of infectious disease. So for those who don't know, it took me 4 years of undergrad, my undergrad degree is in microbiology, 4 years of medical school, 3 years of residency in pediatrics, 3 years of fellowship in pediatric infectious disease to start to practice as an infectious disease specialist. And I've been practicing for over a decade. So I've been doing this for a really long time. And inside the infectious disease world, I actually only have about 4 or 5 areas where I would be considered an expert. And then there's just scads. Like if you wanted to talk about HIV, I could do that on a surface level. But if you brought in like an actual HIV expert up in here, they would, they would be talking about things that I would have no idea about, because like, you can't be an expert in everything, right? And there's no amount of YouTube videos that is going to replace decades of experience, right? And we have to go back to that. We have to go back. My husband is a aerospace engineer. He's got his PhD. I don't know 1/100th of what he knows about Mars or whatever. And so we have to go back to trusting experts. But feel free to question experts. Like, talk to your pediatrician. Ask your questions so that you can feel comfortable.
Thank you so much for breaking it down. Couldn't have explained it better myself. Dr. Amy Edwards, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Up next, what you need to know about the flu vaccine and if it's safe to get it at the same time as others. There's a lot of misinformation out there about vaccines, and it's important to know that there is no vaccine that is 100% effective. There is no vaccine that prevents infection. The concept of vaccines is to teach your immune system to recognize a virus and fight it off before symptoms appear and make you sick. That said, vaccines are not without some risk, and some people do have bad reactions. The Health Resources and Services Administration runs the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, where people who've been injured by vaccine can file a claim. COVID-19 vaccine claims are filed with the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program. But most health professionals will tell you that the benefits of protection against viruses that can potentially be deadly are not to be ignored. Here's what our Verify team wants you to know about the flu shot.
To get answers, we went to Dr. Passaretti, chief epidemiologist at Atrium Health and the CDC. According to the CDC, everyone 6 months and older should get a flu vaccine. The agency says this year's vaccine will protect against three different flu viruses. Flu vaccines cause antibodies to develop in the body about 2 weeks after vaccination. That's why Dr. Passaretti says you should think about getting the shot now.
I generally encourage people to get their flu and COVID shot around that October timeframe to really have it be peak efficacy when we're in the prime of respiratory viral season.
One myth she wants to dispel: the flu vaccine does not give you the flu.
It's not possible that the flu vaccine give you the flu. Certainly you may feel crummy around the time you get the vaccines, but usually that's short-lived, less than 24 to 36 hours, and you know, not the actual flu.
Dr. Passaretti says even if you get the vaccine, there's a chance you could get the flu, but your symptoms will not be as bad.
Even if you get influenza or COVID after you get the vaccine, you'll get a milder case of it. You're less prone to end up in the hospital, less prone to have severe consequences from the infection.
Now, according to the CDC, most healthcare insurance plans cover the annual flu shot as preventative care, but make sure to check with your provider. The CDC says the vaccine is often available at no or low cost to people who do not have insurance. With your Verify, I'm Megan Bragg.
We all know that COVID never went away, but is it safe to get the flu shot and COVID at the same time? Our Verify team looked into that.
Walk into any pharmacy and you're probably inundated with advertisements urging you to get a flu shot and an updated COVID-19 vaccine. Several people on social media are wondering if it's safe to get both vaccines at the same time or if they should space the two shots out. So let's verify. Can a person get the COVID-19 vaccine and the flu shot at the same time? Our sources are the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Food and Drug Administration, Dr. Payal Kohli with the University of Colorado, and Dr. Sarah Lynn Mark, a former senior medical advisor to the White House. Traditionally, the flu vaccine is administered in the fall ahead of peak flu season in the winter. We've also seen cases of COVID-19 spike during these same months as people gathered for the holidays. The CDC studied self-reported data from more than 92,000 people who received a booster shot and a flu shot during the 2021 flu season and concluded it is safe to administer both vaccines at the same time. The study found that about 10% more people who received both vaccines reported typical symptoms associated with them, like fatigue, headache, and muscle ache, than those who only received the COVID-19 booster. But the reactions were usually mild and went away quickly. So, yes, a person can get the COVID-19 vaccine and the flu shot at the same time. Both Drs. Coley and Mark tell Verify getting the two shots is more convenient and may encourage more people to get vaccinated against the flu and COVID-19. With your Verify, I'm Brandon Lewis.
Bottom line, if you have any questions about vaccines, talk to your healthcare provider. And don't forget, your local pharmacist is also a doctor and can help you decide which vaccines are right for you. That'll do it for this edition of Prescription for Life. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Monica Robbins, wishing you and yours good health.
Thank you so much for tuning into Health Yeah. Please find me on Twitter and Instagram at Monica Robbins. Like and follow my Facebook page, Monica Robbins WKYC. Find video podcasts at Monica Robbins' channel on YouTube. And please subscribe. Wishing you great health and hope to see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to Health Yeah with Monica Robbins from WKYC Studios. Subscribe now so you never miss an update. And find more on everything you heard here on WKYC.com and on the WKYC app.